what triggered this bizarre behavior.
Journey into the cold heart of Northern Darkness with Nordic Crimes.
That case became like a scene from a horror movie.
A new true crime documentary series that chilled the bone.
The hunger for killing is increasing in the course of these homicides.
Listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Nordic Crimes is a part of the Acast family.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, and welcome back to 1 Minute Remaining. My name's Jack Lawrence, the host and creator of this show. Today, we'll go behind the walls of one of America's most infamous prisons, San Quentin.
You have a prepaid call from
Juan Haynes,
an incarcerated individual at San Quentin Rehabilitation Center.
Mr. Haynes.
Mr. Jack Lawrence, how are you, sir? How are you doing, sir?
I am very well, thank you, sir. I am one of nearly 3,000 people in San Quentin State Prison who are paying for past mistakes. Most of us want to do the right thing so that we can earn parole or clemency and get back to our families and communities. My right thing is journalism. Every day I walk the yard listening to the struggles and triumphs of fellow prisoners, gathering material to tell our story. My goal is to answer, so what? More than 26 years behind walls have shown me that free people aren't really paying attention to what's happening in our society's prisons and jails. Journalists, especially those on the inside, have a duty to show what is going on and why it matters. There is no privacy and no access to the internet. I use a typewriter and pen to send my stories to publications. Sometimes I feel the pressure that I may offend powerful interests. As an example, since contradicting the official report regarding the 2015 Legionnaires' disease outbreak at San Quentin, I've been persona non grata to some prison officials. No wonder professional journalism about prisons and jails from an incarcerated voice is rare. Most of the time, it feels like I'm walking a tightrope. I'm always being yelled at and also praised. Still, I'm compelled to pick up my pen, because our walled-off voices need to be heard. How else can Americans learn what's working and what's broken inside the prison system? It's up to incarcerated journalists to inform those conversations. These are the words of prison journalist Juan Marino Haynes, a man who now dedicates his life to telling the stories of his fellow man within prison walls. He's not a man who says he's innocent. He's also not a man who says he's been unjustly dealt with. However, he does say he's not the man he once was. Before he was Juan Marino Haynes the journalist, he was a very different person.
My name is Juan Marino Haynes. I'm 66 years old.
I was convicted of bank robbery, a series of bank robberies in San Diego County in 1996, and I initially received a sentence to 80 years to life that was later reduced to 55 years to life. Now, currently, California has passed a series of laws allow me to start appearing before the parole board once I turned 60 years old and had 25 years of incarceration. And so I've appeared before the California Parole Board twice. Most recently in June of last year, I was given a 3-year denial. However, the board made a provision for me to be able to go back to them again in December of this year.
Tough on the old mental health, I'd imagine.
Oh, absolutely. The process of going through parole, it plays heavily on your mental health, as well as moreover the overcrowding.
Yeah.
In California prisons, particularly at San Quentin, because the cells are about 4 feet by 9 feet long, and they're double occupancy cells, and so it's impossible for two people to stand in the cell at the same time without bumping into each other.
So take me back to Juan Marino Haynes' beginnings. Where did you grow up as a kid?
Well, I'm a Navy brat, and so my dad spent 23 years in the Navy and retired in San Diego and settled down there. I went to most of my K through 12. I did mostly in San Diego, and after high school, I went in the Army and spent 4 years in the Army on two different stints. Got kicked out of the Army on a bad conduct discharge based on, you know, my drug and alcohol use at that time. And so after the military, I came back to San Diego and, I just started getting into trouble behind drugs and alcohol and the horrible conduct that comes along with, you know, substance use disorder.
What was the drug that had its hold over you?
Mostly alcohol, marijuana. This is during the 80s.
Yeah.
This is pre-crack epidemic,
right,
and everything
okay.
like that. And
right.
So it was just the typical drugs of that time. For me, I wasn't like a hardcore drug user, but you don't have to be a hardcore drug user for it to affect your daily life. So, like, just the marijuana and the alcohol were still prevalent in my life, you know,
yeah.
Particularly alcohol.
And you had a bit of an addictive personality?
I would say so. I mean, looking back, I was like one of these, like, weekend warriors. I wasn't a sloppy drunk. I was like you would consider a functional alcoholic.
Yeah.
I held a job. I was able to, you know, like, pay my bills and everything like that, but I couldn't manage my life.
Yeah.
Emotionally, I was a wreck.
What were you doing for work at the time?
Actually, I worked in the this area in San Diego called Industrial Park, and I was an electronic technician.
You're a smart guy then.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that. I ended up in prison and ruining my life. That's not very smart.
Well, yeah, okay, yeah. Matt, you're intellectually smart, maybe not so.
That's why I was a functioning addict. I had a lot of issues. Through my childhood that played out in my adulthood, and I had a hard time just managing my life.
Right, okay.
You can say I had a lot of mental health issues at that time.
Again, like with many of the situations that we cover on this show, Juan had a very tough upbringing and a volatile home life.
Home life was very chaotic, very violent, very unstable for a child to have gone through. If you have an alcoholic parent and you have, you know, abuse occurring in the home, a child just doesn't know how to navigate and deal with that.
Of course.
And so going into adulthood, thinking that was normal, that's, you know, imagine that. I'm a kid. I don't know what's normal. I don't know what's right. I didn't have the modeling of normality growing up.
Yeah.
And so I could distinguish. I knew right from wrong. You know, it's not like I was an evil, bad kid or I was like molded into this person. I didn't understand the effects of that environment on my life.
Yeah.
As a kid and even today, my natural go-to is curiosity. I'm very inquisitive. You, when they say curiosity killed the cat, you can imagine as a kid, me trying to figure out what's going on in my household.
Did you get in trouble with the law when you were a youngster before the army, or was it, you know, were you pretty straight?
I was pretty straight. I got into one small kind of like little problem when I was about 17 years old, with some friends breaking into a house, but it was like burglary is a serious crime, but that was the only thing that I've ever been like in trouble with the law for as a youngster. And it was so close to me going into the military at that time. A lot of times if you got into trouble with the law, they give you the option to go into the military.
Yeah.
And I was going in anyway, so it wasn't even a big deal. It was more of a breaking and entering and trespassing, not to minimize the fact that I was a burglar.
He says that his addiction issues and trauma from his past meant that he did find himself constantly getting into trouble and bad situations. During his time in the military, he would find himself getting locked up in the army stockades, disciplinary actions against him, until eventually he was kicked out. In 1984, Juan would find himself arrested on a sexual assault charge and sentenced to 7 years in prison.
I do that stretch and I get out in 1990, and that's what, in 1996 is when I did the bank robberies. And I've been in prison ever since.
With the bank robberies, again, I'm assuming this is to feed your addiction issues?
Be honest, no. I mean, I don't want to put it this way, but I was having some real issues mentally.
Right.
We could put it that way.
Sure, okay.
I mean, my life was a wreck.
Yeah, okay.
There's nothing. So you can see, like, from childhood to the military to everything that was going into my life, it was a wreck. Nothing was going right. And so with the addiction, the mental health issues, my life was just like chaos. And so, I would have to write a memoir to explain, to connect the dots to all these disasters that were going on with my life up until 1996. I've been incarcerated since 1996.
Juan does not try and defend any of his actions from his past and says that there was absolutely no reason for him to be doing what he was, or in fact, conducting bank robberies. He says he was just mentally in a bad place and had essentially become his father.
It's absolutely inexcusable. There was no reason for me to do any of that. And so I went through a really chaotic and confusing breakup with my significant other. I was going through a lot of domestic problems that were similar to the same type of problems I had while I was growing up. I was being my father to my significant other, and so nothing was going right. It's very difficult to explain criminal behavior reflectively from 27 years ago. And so that's why I'm trying to explain, you know, all of these things. Like, right now we're in a conversation with things that happened, you know. At first of all, we have to go back 27 years, and then we have to go back another 6 years, and then we have to go back another 10 years. Mm. And like, I am 66 years old trying to reflect to you all of these things about a person that doesn't even exist anymore.
After his arrest for the bank robberies, Juan goes to trial. And again, he says at the time, as the person he was back then, he couldn't see the damage that he had caused.
I took it to trial and tried to make every excuse in the world. You know, I mean, so here's the mindset of me 27 years ago robbing a bank. Here's what I'm thinking. Here's what's fucking weird. I'm saying, the banks are insured. All I'm doing is using a note. Nobody's going to get hurt. And, banks are, you know, carry a lot of money. And so here's the reality, me reflecting back on that type of a mindset. When I went into one of these banks to rob a bank, one of the tellers was so terrified that she couldn't come back to work. when she testified at the preliminary hearing about that, I knew it, and it hit me, right? But still, I was so kind of selfish. I was so, like, in this kind of denial of who I really was and the harm that I was doing to my community that I pushed past that to make excuses for what I was doing. When you took to the fact that during another bank robbery, I ran across a highway and someone almost hit me, and that person was terrified because they almost killed someone. And so none of these things were registering me 27 years ago, but these are the things that I learned about the people that I harmed 27 years ago by a kind of thinking, oh, I'm not hurting anyone by robbing a bank with a note. But what the reality is each one of those people that was in that bank, they had to testify, they had to take time out of their lives in order to make sure that the community was safe from someone like me. It's that harm that I refused to look at that time. When I start going back to look at all the things that I've done to get to where I had to be, which is in prison in 1996, you know, here now at 66, I can stretch my head and look back and go, you know what? That dude right there was out of control. Now, there were some things that happened to me that were contributing factors to my criminality, things that most people deal with but don't turn to crime, don't turn to hurting people. I happen to be that type of person who did turn to hurting people and did turn to crime. Because every person who has an alcoholic parent does not turn to crime. Every person who is abused by their family don't turn to crime.
Yeah.
And so I had to kind of like unravel these things for myself. So what happened to me? Why did I turn this way? I made choices in my life that were incorrect, that were bad, that were horrible. And those were based on how I viewed myself and what I thought that I was entitled to when I was growing up.
Yeah.
What I was afraid of when I was growing up. And so, you know, looking back with a mature mind of a 66-year-old person, I could look back and I can reflect on these things, you know. But, you know, I can't change any of that, you know. That's my life.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
You know, and so when you ask these questions that are about me and who I am, who I used to be, how I got to where I am right now, what was this path like to get to this person who I am today, I'm not going to not be who I was. I'm not going to cover up that person who made Juan Marino Haynes the person who he is today on March 10th, 2024.
Yeah.
I am who I am. I have to own that. All the bad parts that most people want to hear about. Because if I start telling you all these great things that I'm doing today, that's a bunch of bullshit. Because there's a path to who you are today. And that path sometimes is not so pretty and not so clean. Mine is ugly. I could be apologetic. I'm very remorseful for the path that it took me to get to where I am. I wish it worked this way, but it is. And the only thing I can do is to be honest and truthful and answer your questions the best I can.
You know, I find people are far more receptive of that. And as you said, you know, you could just talk about the great things that you've done since you've been incarcerated, which I do want to talk about. But as you said, you own your past, and I think people are far more open to that.
Yeah, but I find when if I do that story, and I've done stories like that, and I just feel horrible because I feel like the journalists really didn't do their job. You know what I mean? If you don't ask, I'm not going to answer it.
Of course.
I respect that out of what you're doing is to get the full picture.
So Juan is found guilty and sentenced to 80 years to life. This sentence essentially means that he would have to serve a minimum of 80 years in prison before he could be considered for parole. At that time, you know, as that person that you were, not really taking ownership for those things, did you feel like sort of life was essentially over?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I started off at a level 4 maximum security prison in close to Los Angeles called Lancaster. I spent maybe about 5 or 6 years there, and they sent me to another maximum security prison close to the Mojave Desert in Imperial Valley, California, called Calipatria State Prison. I spent about another 5 or 6 years there, and then they sent me to a lower custody prison. I spent about 3 or 4 years there, and then in 2007, I got to San Quentin. Now, during these times in the maximum security prisons and like slightly lower security prisons, medium security prisons, my whole kind of like mindset is life is pretty much over. I have no support from the outside. I'm completely cut off from my family, and I'm running around prison kind of like doing the prison thing.
So gangs, all the rest of it, that side of prison?
All of that, you know, pretty much, you know, not getting into a whole lot of trouble, a little bit of trouble here and there inside, but, you know, definitely not working in any type of rehabilitative efforts.
I can imagine, you know, it would be hard to think about rehabilitation when, you know, you're looking down the barrel of the sentence that you were looking down.
That and being in facilities that pretty much don't have any rehabilitative services. You have to remember, this is during the time of Gray Davis, when Gray Davis is telling California lifers the only way you're going to get out of prison is in the pine box. That's what the Democratic governor is telling incarcerated people at that time. You know, so pretty hopeless.
As Juan says, in the late 90s, release from prison became a lost hope for almost 20,000 Californian inmates whose sentences had become de facto life terms because of the approach adopted by the governor, Gray Davis, who indeed stated the only way lifers would be leaving prison on his watch would be in a pine box. Inmates whose terms were not fixed in length had been able to win freedom by obeying prison rules and being deemed safe to return to society. But the Board of Prison Terms had granted many fewer parole dates. And ever since Governor Davis took office, he had blocked the release of every inmate judged deserving by the board. Prison is supposed to be about rehabilitation, but, you know, when you've got governors saying that stuff, then anyone in prison is going to go, well, what's the point in rehabilitation?
Well, you would think that, but during the 80s and 90s, California's penal code literally states the purpose for prison is punishment.
So the prisons that you'd all been to, they didn't have any programs or anything like that dedicated to helping incarcerated men sort of improve life?
No. There was nothing except for like AA, religious services, and if you were lucky, you got NA.
So Juan is bouncing around from prison to prison, fully immersed in prison life, until in 2007, he's transferred to the infamous San Quentin Prison.
As long as they have San Quentin, I think you can always have violence.
San Quentin is a scary place, you know, and when inmates come here, almost without exception, they're frightened people, and frightened people behave differently.
San Quentin opened its doors, so to speak, in 1854 and is California's oldest prison. It also has the state's only death row facility and the US's largest, and has housed some of America's most infamous inmates. Over the years, San Quentin has been no stranger to controversy and violence, such as in August of 1971. What happened at San Quentin that Saturday afternoon is still a matter of some dispute, although six people would lose their lives that day. Three were guards whose throats had been cut and bodies were found in a cell. Two were white inmates who were found with the guards. Their throats also had been cut. Also killed was George Jackson, an African-American who was one of the most controversial prisoners ever to serve time in California prison. The official story, which had been released and is disputed, is that it was a prison escape gone wrong. Claims were made that an attorney smuggled a gun into the facility as part of a prison escape that was being planned. And when guards discovered it early, it led to an impromptu attempt, which ended in the six deaths. San Quentin has certainly faced its issues in the past, and even more recently during COVID. However, in March of 2023, Governor Gavin Newsom announced a historic transformation of the San Quentin prison as part of a project to improve public safety, with a greater focus on rehabilitation and education. And as part of that project, the prison was renamed San Quentin Rehabilitation Center. Rewinding almost two decades to when Juan arrived at the prison, he says that this was a turning point for him and an almost instant change in his life.
Okay, so when I got to San Quentin, it was like stepping onto Mars. And you have to realize that, like, I'm into criminal thinking and everything like that. And so when I get to San Quentin, I don't even want to be here. I walk in and the cell is, I come in at night and the cells are so small that I got traumatized right there off the gate. I did not want to be here. My property wasn't here. I was here. I didn't know anyone. It was a tiny cell. The person they put me in the cell with was not a very welcoming person. It was a stranger meeting a stranger. But what had happened is the difference between San Quentin and all my previous incarcerations. So from 1996 to 2007, I had no support, no hope. Everything was just dismal. But the day after I got to San Quentin and they classified me, put me in front of a counselor, the counselor gave me a job that actually paid me money.
Right.
And I was like, whoa. And so I was earning an income, first of all. And so I was going to work every day to get my little check. And my little check would cover, I'd get anywhere from $35 to $50 a month. And in prison, that's a lot of money. That's enough money to at least buy your necessities.
Yeah.
And so now for the first time in my incarceration, I'm earning an income. I'm going to work every day. And I can go to the canteen and buy some stuff that I need. And so then I met a couple of guys who had been here for a while. And, you know, they kind of took a liking to me, you know, just because of my personality and everything like that. I could write a little bit, you know what I mean? And so I get into this journalism guild, and I become like the star pupil over there. And the main guy there, his name was Arnulfo Timoteo Garcia. That's the name to remember, that's going to go down in my memoir and in history as a very, very important person in California prison reform for a lot of reasons.
He found he had a talent and a love for writing and would join the San Quentin News and talks me through a series of stories that had a profound effect on him. And it all started with a program called Get on the Bus. It's run by the Catholic Church and it's all about family reunification. Get on the Bus is about bringing families together during Mother's Day and Father's Day. And at San Quentin, that is reuniting fathers with their kids.
What the Catholic Church does is they gather up all these kids. Like, I'm in Northern California, so they gather up all these kids from Southern California whose father is serving time in Northern California, and they get on the bus, and they come to San Quentin. I'm covering this story for the first time, and when they do it, for me, it's pretty cut and dry going there. I'm going to interview some kids, interview some dads, interview some families, boom, boom, that's it, right? So I go covering this story, and I'm talking to some of these kids and these dads. This is the first time some of these dads had put their arms around their sons, like in 5, 10, 15 years. Really super emotional for me to see these families come together. There were a lot of tears, a lot of hugs, a lot of laughs, a lot of emotion, a lot of face painting. And it was like, it's really powerful. And I felt really good. And that was that. And so now I'm doing this every year. It's the highlight of my journalism to go out there. Now I'm seeing kids who came back the second year. I'm seeing just all kinds of stuff that is just incredible. And this is the part that really got me. One of my friends, he was an ex-gang member. And so his son was in prison too, in a different prison. And so his son read about his father in San Quentin during Get on the Bus, and I'm talking to him about some of the work that he's doing in San Quentin, and the son reads about his father. Now the son wants to kind of come to San Quentin, drop out of a gang to be with his father, wow. Change his life. Now as a journalist, the guy that wrote that story to change that father's son's life, that made me feel like I was really doing something.
Juan, however, doesn't just report on the nice side of prison life.
I covered the Legionnaires' disease. I covered the Pelican Bay hunger strikes. I covered the Adjustment Center lawsuit against the 6 death row plaintiffs filed against CDCR. I did the Punish for Being Sick series of story where people who got infectious diseases were sent to solitary confinement. I didn't shy away from covering those types of stories, but I didn't get a lot of enjoyment out of those stories. The stories I got enjoyment of doing as a journalist was the stories that I did about family reunification.
I find interesting that the prison would allow you to report on certain things. Did you get pushback, or did any of your articles have to be read by authorities before they would go out? How does that work?
My relationship with the Department of Corrections while I was working with San Quentin News, and I was told, they said, Juan, we're going to treat you just like any other journalist. And so, and they did. The entire time that I was working at San Quentin News, I worked under a Lieutenant Sam Robinson. And I gave them the blues here and there, but what I respect about Lieutenant Robinson, I would ask questions, and he would answer them. I would ask questions about death row, he would answer them. He'd even taken me up to death row for interviews before. He's arranged those. It was never a matter of being allowed to write anything. But the parameters are, there's absolutely no censorship of San Quentin News while I was there. But what they did review the newspaper, but those reviews dealt with safety and security concerns. Like, we wouldn't publish anything that would be advocating for prison escapes or anything. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely, of course.
So
yeah.
As long as we stuck to journalism.
He would work his way up to become the managing editor of San Quentin News and worked with them for over a decade. And today, now works as editor-in-chief for Solitary Watch. Solitary Watch is a non-profit watchdog organisation that works to uncover the truth about solitary confinement and other harsh prison conditions in the United States by producing high-quality investigative journalism, accurate information, and authentic storytelling from both sides of prison walls. It's not just print journalism that Juan is involved in either. San Quentin is quite unique in that it also has a full podcasting setup. I have no doubt there will be many listening to this who are, like myself, fans of a podcast called Ear Hustle, a show that is produced from behind the walls of San Quentin. If you haven't heard it, do yourself a favour and check it out. But there's not just one podcast coming out of San Quentin, as Juan himself works on a show.
you talked about Ear Hustle, a podcast that I work on. This podcast called Uncuffed, and it's another podcast at San Quentin where that's where I got my podcasting chops, working with Pro Tools.
So you've got access to all that sort of stuff in there as well, which is amazing.
That's correct. That's great. I got my podcasting training. I went through that program last year, and you know, you could go and I got a plug out there for Uncuffed. You can go out there and see some things that I produced in the podcasting world.
I'm currently looking at the weareuncuffed.org website right now. It's far more professional than my own website.
Well, I'm not going to say they're well-funded, but they're funded, you know, so I'm sure you're doing pretty good for a one-man band. You know, they have the whole crew.
You have 1 minute remaining.
This is the story of Juan Marino Haynes so far. And if you haven't already, go and check out the podcast Uncuffed and Ear Hustle, plus some of Juan's work. I put all the links in the description of this episode. It was an absolute pleasure to sit down and chat with him about his story and the work that he now does. And Juan and I are in discussions about an OMR and Solitary Watch collaboration, so watch this space. Coming up, I speak with another man who says he is not innocent. However, he does say that after his arrest, prosecutors would fabricate a weapon in order for them to change his conviction from manslaughter to murder. And nobody else said that you had a gun.
Hey, Jack, hey, you can put me in a lecture chair. I'll sign the papers on the day that it happened, Jack. Nobody else said I had a gun.
Next time on 1 Minute Remaining. 1 Minute Remaining is a Mashed Pumpkin production, created, hosted, and produced by Jack Lawrence. Audio and sound design by Jack Lawrence and Dom Evans of Earsay.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking!
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise!
Give me some smiles.
Cheese!
Give me more beaches.
Beaches!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.